You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. I'm joined by a very special co-host today, Molly Lombardi.
Hello. Happy to be here.
What's happening, Molly?
You know, it's a beautiful, foggy, rainy day here in Boston, and, you know, we're hanging out. It's good to see you.
Absolutely. Shout out to Trish McFarland, who's on assignment,
Yes. About
to go off somewhere really fun and special. So hello to Trish.
Hi,
today,
Trish.
Who's not here with us. We are at a very special place, though.
We are.
We are in Boston.
We are.
At the IBM HR Summit.
Absolutely. And joined by many of our other industry friends. So hopefully everyone's having a good time, and we're talking to IBM about their Smarter Workforce initiatives.
And as a reminder for HR Happy Hour listeners, who may not remember Molly, you are also, there's more to the story.
There's so much more.
There's more to the Molly story. Let's poke that bear a little bit. Molly is the co-founder.
I am.
Of Aptitude Research Partners.
I am, along with my wonderful co-founder, Madeline Lorano.
And the co-host of
Research on the Rocks, your favorite new podcast on the HR Happy Hour Network.
That's my favorite new one. I'm excited about it. I just got a tweet from someone yesterday who tweeted me about Research on the Rocks,
oh,
the new episode.
Great.
Said, love the episode.
Oh, good.
Fantastic and all.
Well, another one is coming soon.
That's true. Another one coming very soon.
Yes.
And so really excited about Research on the Rocks, of course.
Yes.
Really excited about what's going on.
Nothing
with the
on the rocks this morning, though.
No. It is morning. We are not quite in the HR happy hour. We're in the mood and the spirit, but
we
not
are.
Sort of physically
yes,
there yet,
yes.
Right? As it's
we can have happy hour anytime, anywhere.
That's true. And and actually, we've got kind of a great topic to talk about on the show, which is HR Gives Back.
HR Gives Back.
What is HR Gives Back, Molly?
Sure.
Let's just talk about that.
Yeah. So HR Gives Back is an initiative that started kind of with an inkling. So I was diagnosed with Parkinson's about 3 years ago. And about 2.5 years ago, I sort of came out to the HR technology community and was overwhelmed by everyone's support and the outpouring of stories of people who either had family members with Parkinson's or things like that. And I started to think, gee, I have a platform. I have an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's something I can do. And last year, the HR Technology Conference happened to be on the same day that Marty McFly went back to the future. If you're old enough to remember the Back to the Future movies.
Well, so he arrived in the future.
He arrived on October 21st, 2015.
Gotcha.
And so, of course, Michael J. Fox is the patron saint of all of us with Parkinson's
sure.
these days. And so the coincidence just seemed to align, and I said, well, gee, I know people with some personal and corporate wealth. I have a cause. Can we separate them from some of it? And so a little bit, kind of under the radar, we worked with LRP and some of our friends to put together what we called HR Gives Back. Originally, it was HR Gives Back to a Future Without Parkinson's, kind of trying to tie in the movie.
Sure.
But HR Gives Back, we figured, could be something that would live on. And so last year, we were able to raise almost $50,000 through our great sponsors and our efforts for the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this year, almost by popular demand, I started getting calls, hey, is that HR Gives Back thing happening again? And the great support from the folks at the HR Technology Conference got on board early, and we've got great sponsors for this year. We're actually benefiting two causes this year.
Okay.
Continuing to support the Michael J. Fox Foundation, but also the American Heart Association, which is something I think everyone has been touched by. Obviously, the American
sure.
Heart Association with heart disease and stroke and things like that. So
yeah.
Two great organizations. And we're already up to $29,275.
So wow. That is nice.
It's fantastic.
That is nice.
Way to start fundraising.
And once people learn more about it from
yes.
this show and from other places, I'm sure we'll hit that. The goal has got to be, right, to kind of get to last year and maybe get a little past
I'd
it?
I'd love to get to 75 if we
Ooh,
can this
that
year.
That would be
That's
great.
Old,
all right,
but,
let's write that down.
HRGivesBack.org, direct you to everywhere you need to go. You can choose where your donation goes. So you can send it towards the American Heart Association or the Parkinson's Foundation. we're happy to support both and wanted to give you guys some choice too.
Yeah, that's great, Molly. It's been actually, I know I can speak for the HR Technology Conference that, you know, we're super excited to be partnering with the HR Gives Back folks again. And it's not just you, right, Molly, right? There's other folks involved.
No, there's other folks involved. One of the most important of those, and my partner in crime in this has been Gina Killey at Devon PR. She has been, if anyone who knows her, she's a force of nature.
She is.
She makes things happen.
She's quite something.
And she and all of Devon have been great helping support us with visibility and press and connections and advice and all of that good stuff. So they've been fantastic partners as well. Also, my other sort of partners in crime, Mike Politic, who is also a young onset PD person, who was my inspiration. I actually was diagnosed just before HR Tech 3 years ago, and I hadn't disclosed, and I met him, and I thought, somebody young who's still working, who's in our industry, you know, it's fabulous to see. And Teresa Temme, who actually works for IBM Watson now. So that was sort of our core group.
We should have, like, found her out in the hallway, maybe.
I don't think she's here today.
You know, let me ask you, Molly, you mentioned, like, another sort of young person like yourself, you know, diagnosed with Parkinson's. I mean, for folks like me who just, I mean, we're aware, we're familiar with
Michael J. Fox.
Muhammad Ali, right? I mean, but not so familiar with Parkinson's as being a disease that can impact people and families at younger ages. Is that, how common is that?
It's not that common. So about 10% of diagnoses happen before the age of 60. Typical age at diagnosis is 62. So if there's a million people in the U.S. approximately that have Parkinson's, so about 100,000 of those would be were diagnosed when they were under 60. So it's I'm one in a million.
I love that.
In so many ways. But yeah, Parkinson's is interesting. And I actually have done some work with a local part of the Fox Foundation, the Young Professionals, and what's interesting is not only are there people like myself who are diagnosed at a young age, which is a bit unusual, but in a way kind of great, because we often have slower progression, and we also are still often in the prime of our ability to advocate.
Right.
So in some ways I think of it as a bit of a honor and obligation, but a happy obligation to say, if I, you know, because I have the ability to, you know, be able to be out, which some people are not with their diagnosis. So it impacts, it can impact young people in terms of having the disease, but also a lot of caregivers. As parents age and things like Parkinson's come into their lives, a lot of support for caregivers is important too. So I think it can affect people in a lot of ways, for sure.
Yeah, and I think in dealing with Parkinson's and heart disease, other diseases, cancer.
Yeah, people have had strokes.
Right, you know, I mean, it's got to be a challenge, right, for the folks who are really advocating for these causes, just because there's lots of different need. And by that, I mean, like, there's probably need for just primary research also for the caregivers, also for the families.
And that's one of the interesting things, particularly about the Fox Foundation, is they are solely focused on research to speed a cure. That's really their mantra. So their goal is to put themselves out of business as quickly as possible by funding a cure.
Right.
So they actually don't focus a lot on advocacy and things like that. By happenstance, it happens. You know, a lot of us get involved. But their primary financial goal is to fund research. They do things like trying to de-risk drugs in early stages of clinical trials so they get into more traditional funding. They try to direct their funding where a little bit of funding for them might attract more funding from more traditional sources.
Gotcha.
They're run by former Wall Street folks. Debbie Brooks, Michael J. Fox's co-founder, came from Wall Street. So they take kind of a portfolio approach, really well managed, 89 cents on the dollar, and 90 cents on the dollar for the American Heart Association as well. We wanted to make sure we were supporting fiscally responsible.
Right. Goes to the causes.
Goes to the causes.
The treatment and the research.
Exactly.
Right.
The scope of the American Heart Association is a little bigger. They've done about $33.7 billion in research funding.
Right.
Michael J. Fox has done $450 million. But hey, the number of people impacted is a little different.
Yeah, order of magnitude's a little bit different, right, for heart disease versus Parkinson's disease.
But yeah, absolutely. It's sort of, if we find a cure, we don't have to worry about the advocacy and the caregivers, right?
Yeah.
So obviously supporting people in the meantime, but also really fighting for a cure and speeding a cure. And when you think about those numbers, especially the Fox Foundation, there's a number of drugs that are in late-stage clinical trials. And because their funding is so directed, you know, a cure is within reach, so your dollars really will make a difference.
That's a great point, Molly. And maybe that we talk about that a little bit as far as I know you're not a doctor, but now you play
on
TV.
I
imagine, you know, I can only imagine, right? Once you learned of this diagnosis. Yeah. You became a bit of a medical researcher yourself.
A little bit of a data geek. So yeah. I had to go for the data.
But maybe you could just comment from your perspective or your knowledge and dealing with your own, you know, not personally, but necessarily just with your research and with the people you work with, the Michael J. Foxes. It's kind of, where do you think we are on this progression of making advancements and making progress against this disease?
Yeah. So there's kind of two classes of drugs or treatments that we're going after. One is things that are disease modifying, so a cure. Something would take someone who has Parkinson's and take away all the symptoms and cure them of it.
Right.
Then there's a class that are sort of symptom control. So, which for me, you know, if my symptoms are controlled and I'm having a good day, I might as, you know, that's as good as a cure in some regards. You know?
Yeah, sure.
Feeling good is good, you know. Right. But so there's, it's sort of, how do you place your bets on if there's something further down the pipeline that might control a symptom versus something earlier that might cure it? You know, you kind of have to make some of those trade-offs.
Right.
But in terms of curing, there is a vaccine that we're looking at that may stop the progression. So we haven't quite figured out how to reverse it yet. We may be able to stop the progression. We're also looking at a lot of trying to find a biomarker, because by the time someone is diagnosed, typically about 80% of their dopamine production has already been lost by the time you experience symptoms and are diagnosed. So if we could find something that would test for it earlier and be able to stop it, that would be great, even if we can't reverse it yet. So, and so, but there's a number of drugs. So I said, like I said, there's a vaccine in terms of being able to stop it. There's also some really interesting things happening in terms of drugs to help with the off times. So
what do you mean by off times?
Yeah, so when I take my meds 4 times a day. It's very similar to lots of other people with Parkinson's. And you tend to ride a roller coaster, sort of like, you know, ramping up, and then you have a couple hours of feeling really good, and then you come down.
Okay, gotcha.
And the amplitude of that wave is very. Some days it's pretty tight, so you feel pretty steadily good, you know, most of the day. Sometimes the roller coaster dips, you know.
Okay.
So that's what's called an off time. So your meds aren't working, you can't take your next ones yet, you sort of have this off period. They're working on a nasal spray, actually, that would get drugs into your blood system more quickly, so that during those off times you could kind of even out.
Okay.
Bit.
Sort of help yourself can manage that, that process of sort of feeling good and not feeling not so good.
Okay. Because it's one of those things, you can't measure dopamine like blood sugar. You can measure your blood sugar and titrate the amount of insulin to bring it. You can't test your dopamine uptake.
There's not an over-the-counter dopamine test.
They can inject you with radioactive material and map your brain, which I've done once, but that's not something you want to do on a routine basis.
Yeah, that would be costly, painful, and
radioactive.
Yeah, a lot of problems with that approach.
Yeah, exactly. So.
But I sort of, I want to not claim that I figured it all out now from listening to you for 5 minutes, but it does makes a lot of sense, right? Like, hey, the optimal thing is we figure out what's going to cause this, and we figure out how to kind of step in, find those biomarkers, find the right ways to kind of impact those early on. The second step is, okay, we've discovered someone has this disease, well, let's figure out ways to make them feel better and maybe, quote-unquote, cure them.
Yeah.
And then sort of this third thing, or kind of a combination of things you talked about, is the symptom control and the management and allowing people to kind of feel better throughout the day, allowing people to continue their work, continue their, you know, to be productive, to be happy, to be on the podcast. Well, I just thought this, so let me do a quick reset.
Yeah.
Molly Lombardi.
Yes.
My name's Steve Bowes. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. We are talking about HR Gives Back.
HRGivesBack.org.
HRGivesBack.org, which you want to get involved with and check out. We're trying to raise about $75,000
by the end of the conference.
By the end of the HR Technology Conference.
And stay tuned for some possible mobile giving opportunities.
Ooh,
things like
I like that.
So, we're working on some stuff.
So I'm with Molly Lombardi, of course, co-founder, Aptitude Research Partners, co-host, Research on the Rocks podcast on the HR Happy Hour Network as well. So, and just, but I thought that as well when you talked about kind of, you know, feeling good and being out there. And you're out here now. You're out here at the IBM HR Summit with, you know, a bunch of other analysts, a bunch of customers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to say this from no, I know you a little. You seem like you're full bore. You're not slowing down.
I mean, today is a good day, but also in general, I am able to do what I want to do. And you learn a lot about Michael J. Fox and you listen to him a lot when you have Parkinson's. One of the things he says is like, I'm going to feel crappy or good no matter where I am. So why not do that out doing the things I want to do, you know? And I have the same philosophy. It's like, if I can't manage, if I can't control whether it's a good day or a bad day, I can just take my bad day out with my friends or out to do my work or whatever else. And, you know, you have to make some accommodations, but it's like, why sit at home and wait for a good day? He talked about taping something once, and he was having a bad day and moving a lot. And they said, do you want to reschedule for a time when you feel better? And he said, well, great. If you could tell me when that is, I'll schedule everything for that.
Yeah, that'll be the day.
Exactly. Yeah. So, that's my attitude towards it is, you know, it's going to happen either way. You can either do that sitting at home being sad, or you can do it, you know, out in the world. And I will say one thing, too, though. Being out and being active is one of the only things that they think may actually slow or reverse effects of Parkinson's and of heart disease. So I will say one common thread between them is exercise.
Right.
It's so good for your brain. It's good for your body. It's good for your heart. So I'll just sort of put that plug in, because I know that's something both of those causes are definitely focused on. It's amazing things like boxing and cycling.
Really?
Oh, boxing, yeah, is a great support for people with Parkinson's. Actually, not the actual boxing, the boxing training.
Yeah, I think some would say, like, well, didn't that, like, you
head
know,
trauma?
Yeah, the Muhammad Ali story. Yeah. Didn't he spend like 30 years getting punched in the head? Yeah.
But the training, things that cross the meridians of your body, so upper and lower and right and left side.
Which, okay.
And one of the things that people don't often know about Parkinson's is it can lower the volume of your voice and slow the cadence. Clearly, those symptoms have not impacted me.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, but even like the huh noises you make when you punch,
with
the vocalization and the coordination. So, it's amazing what exercise does for your brain, for your body, and for your heart, for sure.
You're an entrepreneur. Sort of, you've set your own rules and your own policies, so this is really not impacting you today.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you thought about, or has this come up in your research, or just talking to people, connecting with people through the foundation, just how organizations, HR policies are adapting. Are there issues in the workplace? Because I imagine if you had a regular corporate job, you'd still want to continue working that job, but you'd also have some issues and things you'd be managing at the same time.
Yeah, there's a couple of things with that. So one is, obviously, I've become much more conscious of ADA and other sort of, you know, accessibility and mobility issues. Touch screens are hell for people with Parkinson's.
Interesting.
Because sometimes if you're tremor, you double-click or you click the wrong thing, and, you know, so you learn to adapt. Voice dialing is great. So I've become aware of that, and certainly there's a lot of stories. I hear a lot of stories of people who are afraid to disclose their diagnosis because they're afraid they'll lose their job and their health care.
Sure.
And so I feel lucky enough that even before I was on my own, I lived in an environment, I worked in an environment and an industry that I could come out, confidently. So I think it's, in general, becoming aware of looking at diversity from multiple different facets, including mobility and accessibility, but also learning to take away the fear for people being able to disclose, because people can still be productive. I hope, and Michael J. Fox said this, and I feel this too, if people can see me being productive and useful with Parkinson's, they're not going to assume if an employee comes and discloses a diagnosis like Parkinson's that they are going to go on disability tomorrow.
Exactly.
And the other really interesting issue is also the issue of charitable giving and engagement and what that does with organizations. So that's come up for me as well. You know, how do you, bring more awareness to your matching funds programs, and how do you use support of charitable organizations as part of your engagement for employees? So it's come up in a couple of different ways. But yeah, I definitely, I really feel for people who are trying to manage this in secret, because it's hard enough, let alone having to try and keep it a secret.
Yeah, it's such a, the way you said it, even at the top of the show, you said you almost like you said you came out or something, right?
Yeah.
Is that the expression you used, right? Which I had never heard in the context of an illness before.
Yeah. And that's kind of, not to discredit anyone, in terms of, coming out for your homosexuality, but, it was certainly a realignment of who I was, and sort of a moment of saying, I'm going to share this with you, and I know it might change your perception of me, but I'm here to make sure that you understand, that it doesn't have to.
Yeah.
And to be able to, again, sort of take on that advocacy role was really important to me. And I think that's one of the things that has sort of made me feel back in control, right? Because if Parkinson's teaches you anything, it's that you are not in charge. Which is probably a lesson I needed to learn anyway, but
I've learned that lesson in some other form contexts myself.
It's come to me many times. So they say life keeps sending you like bigger messages. And so this, okay, I got it. You know? But if I can't control that, what I can do is I can use the resources I have to respond. And you do sort of, there's some trade-offs for that right now, because you're an advocate, you get to talk about your med regimen and things like
that. Yeah, but sometimes you might not feel like talking about it maybe too, right?
Yeah, and it's also, actually one of the best compliments actually Madeline paid to me recently was she said she was at a conference and people were asking how I was feeling, and she was like, why were people asking how you're feeling? Because for us it's a non-issue, right?
Yeah.
She and I, we work every day and we talk to each other and it's just a non-issue, which to me is actually a huge compliment.
Yeah.
I don't mind talking about it. I am happy to be an advocate for it, but I'm also glad when people are, you know, it's me working, you know.
Yeah, you don't necessarily want to be the first thing someone brings up when they see you, you know, hey, how are you feeling?
Yeah, exactly. And the other interesting thing that I've learned too, and this may, you know, people, stroke victims or anyone who has any disabilities, but particularly in my situation, because my drugs work more or less, you know, at different times, sometimes I need help doing things, and then the next minute, I won't need help.
Interesting.
And so it's hard for me to deal with, but then I also know people want to be helpful. So sometimes they'll offer help, and I'll be like, oh, I don't need it. But the next, literally can be the next minute or the next time I stand up, I do. So learning to communicate around your needs and things like that is a really interesting lesson as well.
Yeah.
And helping people help you, you know, letting them know what they can do, which is whether that's, you know, can you open this water bottle for me? Because twisting things is really annoying. Or whether it's, you know, how can I help the cause? HRGivesBack.org.
HRGivesBack.org is how you do that.
How
that's
you do
for
that,
sure.
Absolutely. So I feel like my path is to lower hurdles for people who want to get involved with things like HRGivesBack.
Yeah, it's been really remarkable what you guys have accomplished so far in just a little over a year, maybe, of talking about it. In terms of the HRGivesBack context,
absolutely.
I mean. Yeah,
and the foundation, I know in particular, obviously the Fox Foundation is, you know, near and dear to my heart, but they are very appreciative. We're becoming one of their top 20 fundraisers. In the HRGivesBack movement, which is fantastic. So really, really proud of that too.
Yeah. So for folks who might be listening to this podcast, might be coming to the HR Tech Conference, of course.
Absolutely.
I know we used to give the website out a few times. Yeah. HRGivesBack.org. What else can they do? Is there anything else right now that they can do to sort of just be part of this, or just to let you know and let Gene know that hey, they're there too. They're in this.
Well, certainly we're on social media. So we have a Facebook page at HRGivesBack2016. HR Gives Back, Twitter at HR Gives Back, so you can follow us there. That's a great way to get involved if you just want to give a shout out and let us know you're thinking about us. And honestly, too, getting involved in your local community. There are Team Fox Young Professionals groups in San Francisco, in New York, in Boston, a couple other cities. So young professionals, and these are not necessarily people who have Parkinson's, it's people who are impacted by Parkinson's.
Right.
So it's often the adult, young adult children of people with Parkinson's is typically who those groups are. I think there's one in Dallas as well. And obviously from the Heart Association, CPR classes are, you know, given by the Heart Association.
Mm-hmm.
Contacting the American Heart Association to give blood, to learn CPR, as well as local walks, heart walks.
Oh, yeah, like right. So, we've all seen those, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of things you can do on a local level as well.
Well, so we want to encourage everybody listening to the show, to the HR Happy Hour show, our community out there will be, you know, sharing this, doing all
you won't be able to
our
miss
social,
it.
Our tweeting. We'll make sure we connect, and we'll make sure the show notes have the right website links and all the other information we've mentioned. You know, I'm part of the HR Technology Conference, of course. We're super excited to help in any way we can to support this, to help spread the word and spread
so
the message.
And
just get more folks involved. And we want to hit that goal.
I would say this is the best, most selfish thing I've ever done. So it's I appreciate everyone getting on board. And you know, the conference's support has been fantastic. And I want to take a moment to mention my other sponsors, if I can.
Yeah, please do.
So we just announced our spotlight sponsor, Workday. We're really, really pleased to have them on board. They're making a really big commitment to us this year. Our lead singer, so our theme, we didn't even mention, our theme this year is Sweet Home Chicago, since we don't have the movie Back to the Future this year. So since we're in Chicago, the Blues Brothers Sweet Home Chicago is our theme. So our lead singers, after our spotlight sponsor, Cornerstone On Demand, Ultimate Software, Ceridian, and Devon PR. So those are our lead singer sponsors. We have our guitar heroes, the Star Conspiracy, and their Influence HR Conference and Workforce Software, our guitar heroes. And then Green Job Interview and Equifax are in our horn section.
Nice. So, wow, that's an amazing list of companies that have stepped up and joined the cause here and been participating.
And more to come. And if you happen to be at one of those companies that I haven't named and you are interested in sponsoring, slots are still available. So.
Awesome. Well, that's fantastic. HRGivesBack.org. You want to spend 2 minutes just talking about this?
Yeah.
What are your couple quick thoughts from IBM HR Summit?
Yeah,
from this morning?
Watson and cognitive. It's all about cognitive and sort of you know, rethinking thinking. there's some great quotes this morning that were talking about it's not just putting data in people's hands, it's having the right hands to put it into. I think we're really realizing it's this context of the machines can't do everything, but they can provide us with data to do the right things, but you still need the human side of it.
Sure.
So I think that's been interesting. And obviously, how do we use... somebody said something about, you know, digital transformation in HR isn't so much about sort of the process piece. It's really about how do we rethink... it's not just automation, but it's sort of rethinking how we deliver things and being able to learn as we go.
Right. Yeah, lots so far this morning about kind of the adaptive technology.
Not just technology to standardize, but technology to adapt.
Yeah, right. We're finally getting past, I think, at least in most of the conversations around, well, let's just get better and more efficient and more productive at the things we know we have to do, and let's talk about these next generation kinds of things. But in a way that makes sense. And I think the whole key for these guys will be, and we'll see what happens in the next day and a half that we're here, is can those kinds of discussions around disruption and adaptive technology and machine learning or whatever, cognitive computing, like whatever term you want to use, how that actually translates into demonstrable, defensible, and kind of measurable things that people really care about, which is who's the right person to hire, who's the right person to promote, what's the right development intervention for this person who's got a great potential at our company, things like that.
And I think what will be interesting is, you know, obviously with the Kinexa heritage and all of that, they have a lot of measurement tools and assessment tools, and so it'll be interesting to see how they're using that, leveraging their data science along with the technology capabilities to do exactly that. We have the technology to transform organizations. Can we measure and understand the impact?
So. Yeah. So interesting stuff. This should be an interesting next day and a half here at the IBM HR Summit. So thanks to them for hosting us and for having us out there. We're actually going to record one other show from here later on, maybe tomorrow, with one of the IBM customers, which should be interesting as well. So
lots of great customers here.
So Ali Lombardi,
Steve
Aptitude
Bose.
Research Partners,
Absolutely.
Research on the Rocks, HRGivesBack.org. Your whole resume there. Is there anything else I need to mention?
10-year-old Bernese Mountain Dog.
Your dog? I was going to say your dog. Yeah. What's the dog's name?
Kona. 10 years old for Bernese. He's ancient, but
that's a big dog.
That's a big dog.
I've never owned one, but I'm familiar with them.
100 pounds of love.
Yeah. Lap dog, though?
He thinks he is.
Yeah.
He has sort of a body dysmorphic disorder. He thinks he's a lap dog, a little tiny.
Awesome. Well, this has been so much fun. I really encourage everybody to check out hrgivesback.org. If you're going to be get involved, you know, on the corporate side, get your company involved. Sponsorships on the individual side, get involved, donate, get it, you know, advocate, either spread the news, spread the message. If you're hearing this podcast, here's my challenge to you. If you're listening to this podcast right now, please share. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tweet it out, post it on Facebook, do something. This is really important, and it's important to Molly, of course, but it's important to all of us. It's important to all of us, all the families, all the people who are affected by these diseases, which is, quite frankly, almost everybody.
Especially with heart disease. Yeah. And you know, even things like Alzheimer's, some of the foundational research, if it doesn't work for Parkinson's, it may impact Alzheimer's. You know, we're learning more about the brain, so lots of goodness to come from this.
Awesome. All right, Molly, well, thank you so much for
thank
being
you.
Here. Great to see you again.
Great to see you.
And enjoy the rest of the time here at IBM HR Summit. My name's Steve Bose. Thank you for listening to the show. Trish McFarlane, wave to you. We'll see you next time. And that's it. Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show. We will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.